So, Rav Volpe has two pieces on Hanukkah, and we did the previous one last year. So, Mirat Hashem will come up with something new next year. Because hopefully, of course, the Chabur will still be going. But nevertheless, we want to finish up his treatment of Hanukkah, and he has a very, very beautiful piece. He starts off with two midrashim. We'll only read one of them. It's not necessary to read them both. But two midrashim that use the same mushal, the same image, and the same parable to explain what was particularly problematic with Yavon, with the Greeks, with our enemy in the Hanukkah story. So just to read the opening lines of the more famous of the two midrashim, the Medrash here is commenting on the opening of creation. Va'aretz ha'isa tohu, va'vohu, v'choshech, etc. Right? How there was all these different synonyms for nothingness before God created the world. And here the Medrash explains metaphorically that these various synonyms actually each refer to different great empires that at various points in history were competitors, if you will, or enemies of the Jewish people. So the first one is Babel, the Babylonians, and then afterwards you had Madai, and then the one that's of course most relevant for us, what is Choshech, says the Medrash? Choshech zu Malchus Yavon. Choshech alludes to the Greeks, darkness refers to the Greeks, Shechshicha Einayin Shal Yisrael Vigzerotayin, that the Greeks, during the Hanukkah story, they darkened the eyes of the Jewish people, metaphorically of course, through their various decrees which prevented the free exercise of Yiddishkeit, of religion, during that period. And the next medrash, the next few lines, using different words, but makes the same point that the Greeks were hichshicha, they darkened, they blackened the eyes of the Jewish people through their gzeros. So he asks, of course, in the third paragraph, the obvious question, Lama davka golos yavon mugderes b'choshech? Why are we picking specifically, of all things, this metaphor, this parable, this idea, this image of darkness? Why is that the right image to describe the particular evil of our enemy, the Greeks? And he says that the rest of this piece is going to be based on something he heard from Rav Huttner, which is included in Rav Huttner's famous work, Pachad Yitzchak. Skipping to the next paragraph, here's the actual punchline of the essay. Hine, Chazal mityachasim el Yavan b'shnei kivunim. He says, if you look at Chazal's approach to the Greeks, you see two different, and as we will see, obviously, two opposite things. On the one hand, the Chazal, the rabbis, looked at Greek and the language of Greek as something very, very high and very elevated they respected. Shimon Gamliel Omer is quoting from Gemara Masechta Megillah, Af besfarim lo hitirush yichtuvu ela yivanit. The Gemara says, again, not that we do this, but the one language which you could write a Sefer Torah in other than Hebrew would be Greek. Ubalza the Gemara, itself asks, my taima, why should that be? Why should Greek have some special status and stature above and beyond all other languages? So Gemara says, this is based on the pasuk, Yaft Elukim liyefes, v'yishkon ba'ohale shem, that the beauty of Yefes should dwell in the tents of shame. If you skip a line or two, the conclusion of the Gemara is, what do we see from this? Yef Yefuso shel Yefes, the beauty of Yefes, yehei ba'ohale shem. What is the beauty of Yefes? And Rashi there quotes, that's referring to the language of Greek. That is to say that the Greeks are descendants of Yefes. They are the most elevated of that strand of Gentiles. And of course the Jews are descendants ultimately from Shem. And therefore what the Medrash, what the Gemara, excuse me, is teaching us, as Rashi explains, is that there is something that is compatible. There is something that is symbiotic between the most beautiful of the descendants of Yefes, Greek, with the tradition of shame, with Judaism, and specifically the image of that the language, the beauty of Yefes can be in the tents, can be housed within, encased in shame, says the Gemara, we see from this that there can be a way of using the Greek language to further Torah in a way that you couldn't with any other language. So on the one hand, what do you see from all of this? Of course, something very beautiful, a lot of respect, or something powerful and meaningful, and a certain closeness between the Greek language and Jewish Chachma. On the other hand, Mitzad Sheni, Choshech Zeh Yavon, what we just got through saying, that there's nothing worse than Yavon. Yavon represents darkness. So which one is it? Are they the light closest to Torah? Or are they the darkness, which is the opposite of the light? Right? It's an obvious problem. So says Rav Volpe, we're halfway down in the paragraph, middle of the line, towards the end of the line. Gisha du starit zu. So treat zu, this mutually exclusive, this contradictory approach in Chazal, novat miharacha yisodit achat, L'yavon yesh chachma. So says Rav Volpi again, this is based on Rav Huttner, a very powerful insight. And we have this, you know, often in life, and often, and certainly in more sophisticated Torah, which is that the two opposites are in fact flip sides of the same coin. Yes, there's two opposite, contradictory, mutually exclusive approaches that you find in Chazal, where Chazal is schizophrenic. They couldn't make up their mind. They weren't sure if Greek is good. They weren't sure if Greek is bad. Says Rav Volpi, not at all. The two opposite approaches, but they both come from one unified insight, which is what? That from the Torah's perspective, from the rabbi's perspective, liyavon yesh chachma. Yes, we don't deny what the Greeks had was something very powerful. They had wisdom. They had philosophy. Liyavon yesh chachma. Let's continue, because that still doesn't. That's the first step, but we need to do more to understand how that yields two opposite conclusions. But the two branches that go in opposite directions come from one unified, if you will, trunk or source. That is Yavon has Chachma. Namely, as he explains, when we speak about the various galuyot, the various diasporas, the various enemies the Jewish people have had over history, each one of them had a different challenge. Gedra Shogalos Yavon who? Shaklal Yisrael hayatzarach litmodeid im chachmas Yavon. Right? There are various galuyot, I would say now would be an example of one of them, where the emphasis or the real contradiction, the real threat, the real challenge to Jewish people, not intellectual at all. I don't think that many people nowadays, you know, we have some expert mechanchim even in the room and various people who listen to the shiur when it's online, they'll tell me if I'm wrong or they disagree. Most people are not going away from Yiddishkeit, they're not coming towards Torah because they have some other sophisticated approach to life which they think makes more sense than Torah. Right? It's much more physical, much more hedonistic, the pleasures, the freedom of the world. It's very hard to contend with that when you are a lifestyle that's based on discipline and sometimes saying no. That's our goal is now. But says Rav Volpi, that wasn't the challenge in the time of the Hanukkah story. The real challenge there was that Yavon presented another sophisticated philosophy of life that was attractive, that was compelling, that made sense. And it competed on an intellectual level with Torah. That was the challenge that they had to deal with then. Mitzad Chachmaso, and what was so compelling about Greek philosophy and Greek thought, because from the perspective of their wisdom, Karov Yavon LeYisrael Yosrami Asher Kol Shar Golios, the brilliance and the truths of Greek philosophy are closer to the truths of Torah and Yiddishkeit than any other competing philosophy or tradition. Ach Davka Mitocha Kirva Novasa Nagdutar Harifa Bioter. And of course, this is a very, very profound insight with many ramifications for life. It's the very fact that they're so close, yet so far, which is why Chazal have such a biting and critical approach to it, right? And this is, of course, you know, superficially it doesn't make any sense, but we know that with any deep momentary, a moment of deep thought, we know this is true in life all the time. Right. There's many examples in Torah, or if you just think, again, you even think about your own lifestyle choices or your parenting choices, right? Things which are beyond, they're not threatening. Right? There's clarity. Of course, that's not us. That's them. But something that's very, very close, but treif, is much, much more threatening. Like you said, the example of the mashal being of the chazar with one kosher simon, right? That's much more threatening than something that is obviously not us, right? Because the closer it is, there's the confusion. And therefore, davka, because Chazal respected the good of it, and yet ultimately it was wrong, that's why they had to be so harif in their criticism. Yavon eino yachal lahashlim. Sug shel chachma she'ein lo chelik ba, which I think the way he's using the term hashlim here means they couldn't make peace with. Why now he's turning to the other side? How come? Why did they persecute us? Why did they hate us so much? Now again, if you're taking a purely historical perspective, the answer is they wanted to conquer the whole world. I don't know that they had, you know, if you didn't have Chazal's tradition, I don't. Hopefully, it's not heretical. I'm not sure in the historical sources. Am I wrong?
They didn't make gzeiros against, you know.
Other people. There was... So, do we have evidence of that other than Chazal? That they, what they did to us?
That they made theirs against?
Yeah, or... Yeah. We do. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, fine. So, I'm half wrong. That's why we have Nathan here. We missed you the last few weeks. I told you we needed you back. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so the point is, he's now going from the perspective, which according to Nathan is confirmed not only by Chazal, but by other sources, I.e. Nathan, for more, which is that the Greeks obviously had a particular hatred towards us. So now Rav Volbi is turning the perspective. What would they have against us? Why were they uniquely and so antagonistic towards us? So says Rav Volbi, because they couldn't make peace with the fact, if they're the Am HaChachma, if they represent the highest, the most sophisticated Chachma in philosophy, they couldn't make peace with the fact that there was some type of Chachma called the Torah, which they weren't shaykh to, that they had no chelik in. And more than that, V'od, she Chachma sa Torah Chachma Elokit, and it was not just some kind of Torah, but we have geometry, and you have calculus, we have algebra, and you have philosophy. It was much more than that. What they were removed from, what they were separated from, was the highest form, a godly wisdom. And the people that they represented and had that chachma was the chosen nation, not them. So that dafka, because they respected wisdom, made the fact that they couldn't have a chelik in our wisdom that much more confrontational and contentious. Hain sug acher shachachma. Says Rav Volbi, you see from Chazal that it's not just a quantitative difference. You know, Aristotle's philosophy was an 8 and the Rambam's was a 9. It's that there was fundamentally a qualitative difference. Ilu haisa Torah rak anaf echad mikol ha-mada'im shebo mitztayein am Yisrael b'myuchad aliyam orer kinas yavon. If there was one tree of wisdom, and there were different branches, and there's just one people, small people as it is, and they're on the same tree as us, and they just have a little bit of a different branch, and they're better, that wouldn't have made the Greeks crazy, because they still would have owned most of the tree. And they would have seen the connection between what they do and what we do. But a completely different tree, a completely different category of wisdom. Ad kirei, as Chazal say very famously in Eicha Rabba, Chachma b'goyim, ta'amin? Torah b'goyim, al ta'amin. Amze ein yovan yochal ashlim. Right? Huh?
What's the difference?
It's about to come, b'diuk, we're about to get to it. Exactly. So, the point is, says Rav Volbi, you see from Chazal, again, that medrash is often quoted, and I think fairly and appropriately, to emphasize that we should respect the wisdom of the non-Jews. There's such a thing as Chachma B'Goyim Tamin. You know, sometimes Jews get so close-minded, they feel the need to deny the wisdom of the outside world. Chazal didn't deny it. Chachma B'Goyim Tamin. But Rav Volbi's pointing out is, okay, that may be true, he's not denying that. He's saying, but if you focus on that, you're missing a more elementary point of the medrash. That the medrash is saying there's two different categories. What you have by Yavan is not the same thing. It's not just more or less. It's different, right? I think maybe in Rav Huttner himself, but certainly others, Rosh Hashivas, you know, speak, Nush Besser, Ela Andrish. It's not a question of better, it's different. It's qualitatively different. So now comes the question, what is that difference? So next paragraph. This will take us to the end of our learning today. Chochmas Yavan, Oseket Be'olam. Chochmas HaTorah, Torah Shebaal Peh, Osekes b'Torah, Torah shebichsav, says fundamentally, they're operating on two different planes, not necessarily contradictory planes, but different planes. The world of Greece focused on the natural and physical world. And the world of Torah was focused on something much more spiritual and abstract. Gam b'riyas ha'olam. Again, you cannot be, if you forgive me, the indulgence, you cannot be more Torah umada than this. Says Rav Volbi, both science and the natural world and Torah, they are both Giluyim of Ratzon Hashem. They are both revelations of God. The Chachma of the Goyim, of Yavan, of the natural world, is also a Giluy of Hashem. Aval Hevdel Gadol Yesh Bineihem. But you can't ignore the fact that there's a fundamental categorical difference. Briyas Olam, Himatan Hechrich. Umatan Torah, Himatan Chirus. And this is going to be the main point of his emphasis, which I think is really a very powerful take-home lesson for all of us. It says the whole revelation of God in the natural world is built on necessity. Right? There are laws of nature, as he's about to say literally in the next line. Whereas the whole emphasis of Torah is to teach people that there's not necessarily a necessity, but they have the ability, the freedom to choose. I'm not going to have time. I'm happy to afterwards, as, you know, as our minhag is, to talk. But
Well, this is actually on the bit.
Very, very quick.
Well, I'm just curious why he points out Dafka, where he talks about Torah Shabbat. Is that Lafuki Torah Shabbat?
If you'll take a look at the end of the, which we're not going to probably have time for, we're at the end of the next page, going over to the third page on the PDF, if you have it. So there he discusses, I just don't think we'll have time for it, why Torah Shabbat is uniquely, it's not excluding, but the essence of Torah is Torah Shabbat. So Torah Shabbat is basically leading to Torah Baal Peh. That's what's unique about the Jewish people. That he does absolutely say that. But I don't think we're going to have time to get into that. And it's not necessary for the first part. What does that mean? That the Greek wisdom, which focuses on this world, the revelation of God through nature, is that the gift of Hechrech, but Torah is the gift of being volitional, the ability to choose, having freedom. Habriyah mitnahelet lefi achukim hakvuim. As we know, he says, natural world is based on certain laws of nature. Again, for the sake of time, we'll skip the next few lines. But he basically says, you look at the various worlds, the way the world spins, and this, the earth and the heavens, there are various rules and there are cycles. And even in our own physical life, turning over to the next page, even in our own personal life, our biological life, right? There's certain, there's systems, a circulatory system, and this system, the astronomical system, and this, right? There are certain systems and rules, you know, and that's, unless something, God forbid, is going wrong, that's how it works. Ha'olam banoy, second line of the next page. Ha'olam banoy al-hechrech. The whole world is based on rules, necessity, patterns. Lo kein Torah HaKadosha. That's not the way the Torah is. As the famous Chazal tell us, based on the Pasuk, Haluchos Maisei Elokim. The Pasuk says that those Luchos were an act of God. Hema, right? And the Mikhtav, Mikhtav Elokim, the writing was the writing of God, which was Charos al Luchos, engraved on the Luchos. But of course, Chazal tell us, don't, it's a play on words, not engraved charut, ella al tikri charus, ella cherus. It's a play on words. It alludes to freedom. She'en lecha ben chorin, ella misha osek b'torah. Again, this is not for today's sicha, we wouldn't have time, but certainly, this is for a much longer shmooze. A lot of people, I would say, especially the teenagers, but not only the teenagers, you know, find this to be very difficult, very paradoxical. What do you mean? The Torah and the halacha and the Shulchan Aruch are telling me all things I can't do. Take away my freedom. You're telling me that the Torah says that Adarava, the Torah is the true freedom? So, okay, it is paradoxical. It may be true, but it's paradoxical. But why that's true is not for now. But for purpose of our essay, says Rav Obi, you see what are Chazal telling you? That the whole essence of the Torah is to teach a person that they shouldn't be governed by rules or patterns, in the sense that they have to do X or Y or Z every day they wake up. In the same way that they have to breathe, and they have to sleep, and they have to eat, and they have to, right, and the sun has to rise, the sun has to set, and da 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 da. And if any of those things wouldn't happen, the world would collapse, or if a human being didn't eat or didn't sleep or didn't whatever, then they would fall apart. There's a hechrich in the natural world. The whole purpose of Torah is to give a person a freedom. And there is a right and a wrong. This is not relativistic. But the point is, you shouldn't be that you're doing the right out of necessity, not of hechrich, but of cheirus. The person feels free. That is to say, rak kasher hu ben chorin enu kafuf li yitzrav. Right, the greatest enslaver in the world wasn't Paro or I don't know whoever else was enslaving people in human history, but rather the Yetzer Hara. When a person really wants to do the right thing and they can't help it because I'm an eved to my Yetzer Hara. So if you can break free from the shackles of the Yetzer Hara, that you feel the urge to do X or Y, doesn't matter what the X or Y is, and there's a natural biological urge. So if we were just yet another part of the natural creation, if all we had was the hechrich of the natural world, well, if my body tells me I need X, then I would do it even if I know it was wrong. But if I have Torah, that gives me the ability to overcome that and say, no, I'm a free person, I can choose, and I'm choosing not to listen to that Yetzer Hara. That all comes from Torah. So Torah, in that sense, is the exact opposite. Okay, two more paragraphs and we're done. Hinei. Chachmas yavon oseket b'chakiras chukei ateva shem chukei ahechrich. Right? The brilliance and the insights of Greece, which should not be denied, they should be appreciated, they should be studied, but they were all based on the necessity of life, the rules of nature, the rules of necessity. Now he said, what's wrong with that? What's the danger in that? So he adds a nuance here, which I think is the most important point, maybe the whole piece. This is the danger. Again, something inherently dangerous to studying science. But if a person only has a Western perspective, if a person only has a scientific perspective, then not only will you come to look at all the natural scientific things as necessary, but you will subconsciously almost, but almost willy-nilly, just like you look at the rest of the world out of hechrich, you'll start looking at yourself out of hechrich too. And if you're not sure this is true, just open up your eyes. This is the... Huh?
Or a newspaper.
You don't even have to read a newspaper. Nathan, not all of us are, some of us are pure at Torah. No. We read the internet. Who needs to read the newspaper? Old-fashioned guy. You're a Luddite. Right? Everything that the Western culture tells us is, if that's what you feel, if that's what your urge is, So you have to do it. Be true to yourself. Right? They took something that's mamish treif and they made it like a chazer. They dressed it up. They put lipstick on the pig. Instead of being an eved to your yetzer, who wants to be a slave? No one would raise their hand. Who wants to be true to themselves? Authentic. They're describing the exact same thing. They trick you with the language. Right? So that's what it always says. If your whole focus is, again, something which is inherently fine, the hechrich of the natural world, it's only a matter of time subconsciously before you start looking at the human world also as a world of hechrich. And of course, that is completely anti-Torah, as he says in the next phrase. V'deh hevdel yisodi ben chachmas ha-Torah or ben chachmas yavin. Shezu osekes b'matan cheirus. The whole purpose of Torah is to say you're not an eved. And sometimes your quote-unquote true self, meaning your first instinct, is not the right one. That's not the right thing to always give in to what you want to do. Rather, a person is supposed to be mit'aleh. We're supposed to grow. The fact that we all have urges since we've been babies to do X or Y, no one thinks that, you know, a person that naturally has an urge, forgive me, to relieve himself whenever he feels the urge. Right? That's why God made diapers. But you wouldn't think, wow, what a wonderful, wonderful person, being true to his authentic self. The first 3 years of his life, he went to the bathroom the second he felt the need. So therefore, to be true to his, that's clearly who his authentic self is. Can't be more authentic than that. So my whole life, I'm also going to do that because that's my authentic self. Right? That's absurd. But that's in essence what we're doing. And the Torah says, no, you're supposed to grow. Just like a person learns to hold it in until they get to a bathroom. So too, they're supposed to grow in other ways as well. If you only focus on the Greek part, on the Western part, so you think that even human beings are subject to the same rules of necessity the other parts of the universe are. And even though, yes, it's true that they're both part of Ratzon Hashem, nature is not anti-Torah inherently. But you have to understand that one is a building block, a preparatory stage for the next. And he has a nice way of expressing that the Asara Mamaros, Hin Hakdama La Asara Sadibros. Right? Chazal say, whatever this means exactly, we don't know, but that Hashem created the world in 10 utterances, in 10 Mamaros. Says Rav, but yes, the natural world from the galaxies and the Milky Way and everything else, you know, Ad Kedei, the Grand Canyon, or Machteh Rimon, all the way to the flower bed in my backyard. All of that was created with Asar Ma'amaros. That's the world of science, of nature, of necessity. But then came Asar Sadibros, the introduction of morality, of Cheirus, of choice, of the right and the wrong, not just necessity, but different options. You only appreciate the true nature of one, we know this is true in many areas of life, by its contrast, right? This is true often in learning, right? Sometimes we build Havrusa, Harusa, I tell you, you're learning the sugya, I don't know, Kim Levi Rabbi Mine, Kavachomer, says, well, it means this. I'm not sure what you mean. That's not clear. Yeah, sometimes the best way to clarify it is to say, it's not that. Oh, now I know what you mean. Right? Sometimes the Choshech is what makes it. You can appreciate the or, right? Sometimes, a lot of times in life, right? By showing the opposite, you really only then really appreciate the nature of the first thing. Similarly, he says, "Chachmas acheres shal Torah, magiris chachmas olam, chachmas achitzonis, kivadi acheres hu hamala hapinis leumar hekrach shal olam." Yes, if you start off with just the Western and Greek wisdom, it's beautiful. But only once you appreciate the Torah, do you realize that that first one was a lower level and a preparatory stage for the higher level. By having Torah, you appreciate the difference and you know what Chachmas Yavan is. By Chachmas Yavan, you appreciate the difference for what Torah is. And with this, we conclude a few more lines. And now he explains why Chazal were so categoric in the rejection of Greek wisdom. Or more broadly, why we say Torah b'goyim al ta'amin. Because Chachma, of which maybe Greek was the highest, is completely different in its essence and its goals than Torah. Chachmei Torah shkoklim kol ha'davar bepelas yeshal emes aykere chut asara v'mkiru mashenitin l'karev me'efuso shal yavan ve'tiru luchlov ha'torah b'loshin yavanus. So why was the Torah allowed to be written in Greek? Yes, because there is something inherently good about that highest form of natural wisdom. And if it is used for the purpose of Torah, as a help to Torah, as a kli for Torah, then that is fine. Osa chachma yivanus biyachma lachachma Yisrael. However, if a person only focuses on that Greek wisdom, then how could you, formulate in one word the problem? Choshech. Why did, getting back to how we started, right? That was the question. Why did the Medrash, there's a lot of ways you could say the Greeks were bad. Why we simply call them darkness? Choshech, he says, represents the idea of being minugedet betachlis. It's the direct opposite. Golos HaTorah, B'yavon Hichshicha Einei Yisrael. Right? Galus HaTorah. The very fact that the Greeks were trying to wipe out certain halachos in the Torah in the time of the Greeks, that was literally to completely give us an opposite perspective, says Rav Olbi, on what the Torah is really trying to teach us. Dai b'gzeros l'hashkicham, Torah k'l'hachshich lehem. Right? It's true, they only picked a few of them. But what they were trying to do on the deeper level, says Rav Olbi, is to blind them, to darken their eyes, for them to lose perspective. Whether they put on tzitzis or tefillin one day or not didn't matter to the Greeks. It was the broader perspective. Are we basically animals on 2 feet? Just like the elephant has to do what the elephant does, right? Every choice that the elephant's going to make was already imprinted into the bria from the moment it was born. The elephant's going to do what the elephant's going to do. The elephant doesn't wake up each day and decide, should I read Shakespeare today or not? You know, should I graze over here? Should I graze over here? Let me think. What does the wind look like? What does the sun look like? I heard over there. You know, it's not the way it works. It's much more of a natural, basic instinct. Are we just that or not? Yavin was trying to get us to think of ourselves as animals on 2 feet. That's choshech. That's the darkness. That's the exact opposite of what the Torah is trying to do. V'otzos. Shkavnu l'havira mechuke retzon Hashem. As we say, again, this is what we say in our davening. Ulitchosa miliyoda ama nivchar. They want us to lose sight of what makes the Torah unique, and therefore what makes the Jewish people unique. Liot b'nei chorin. The idea that we are truly free to choose. And because we can choose, if we make the right choices, we're mit'alim. We can go up. We can elevate ourselves. We're not necessity. Just like as a baby, in our physical sense, we grow, we improve. So too, on a spiritual, ethical, moral way as well. The thing that Yavon represents and exemplified, as good as it is, but if taken to its extreme, it's literally the diametrical opposite, 180 degrees, the opposite of the Jewish people. And that's why it was so important, why we celebrate with such simcha, the defeat of the Greeks, the Rabban Biyad Matim. Okay, Chanukah Sameach!